Good afternoon, folks. It's that time of the day again, time for the elephant in the room here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. I'll tell you what, I'm excited today. We have a great show for you today. Before we even get started, I want to, you know, welcome and introduce my cast of characters, my cohorts in crime, John Snyder, the best executive director in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania here, if not the entire Northeastern region. John, hey, happy to have you here again.
Thank you, Sam.
We still need to get the Olympics going on to see which one is to make sure he's the best. He's got to prove he's the best.
Executive Director Olympics. I like it.
How many
like
counties
it,
are there here, and how many?
I like it. If you could sell the television rights, I'll get it done.
Each county, two parties per county. He could do it.
And folks, that's our producer, dazzling dandy Daryl Grandy, the man who makes all the magic happen. So hey, I'm telling you, we have a great show today, and we really do. I'm also excited, because our guest today is a good friend of the show, and that is State Representative Jason Ortizai. You've heard Jason many times here before, usually talking about appropriations. The last time he was on, he talked about education and some of the initiatives he had. And today it's going to be a wide-ranging conversation as we talk a lot of things. But Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm glad to be back. We always have fun here. Hopefully it's entertaining for everyone that listens at home, too, especially as the old guy in Allegheny County. It's fun.
Isn't it? Yeah, you're the senior.
I know.
You're the senior up there, right? I mean, I look at you. You're a young guy. Now, you're a young guy, and you have a young family. Now, your wife, you have one child today, right?
Yep.
And your wife is ready to give birth to a second.
Yeah, her due date is actually August 10th, but we've been on high alert for the last week, thinking she could go any day now. So she might call during this show. So if I have to pull out of here real quick, you'll know why.
There you go, folks. Hey, Jason's letting us know. But hey, yeah, we want to take the opportunity to congratulate our friend and his lovely wife Amanda. You know, and we wish you nothing but the very best, the birth of a hopefully healthy baby here. And so we're very excited and thankful that you're able to join us on the show, considering she's almost ready to give birth.
Hey, I always make time for my friends. And like I said, hey, if her water breaks during this, I'll be out of here, but I'll be back at some point.
Well, listen, hey, I know some folks at 911. we can make sure we get folks to her house real fast, Hey, for our listeners here, Jason currently serves on two major committees in the House, Education and Transportation. He further served in critical positions like the Republican Chairman of the Subcommittee on Highways and Bridges under the Transportation Committee and the Republican Chairman of the Subcommittee for Special Education under the Education Committee. And Jason, I want folks to know, you worked very closely with State Senator Devlin Robinson to stop the tolling of the bridge down there on 79.
So from the announcement that they were going to toll, which was hilarious, by the way, this was under the Wolf administration, the then PennDOT secretary called us half hour before she made this public that they were going to toll 9 bridges across the state. 8 of 9 of them were miraculously in Republican districts, one of them being here right there in South Fayette Bridgeville on I-79. Which I believe was for political reasons. We hit that.
Without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. We hit that right off the bat, saying how blatantly unconstitutional, unfair. Oh, and by the way, later we found out we were going to toll to an international company that had ties to Chinese foreign government. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So for 30 years, we were going to turn this over to them. But, we work with local government. We got the lawsuit filed so we'd have standing in court. We won that court case. Pretty handily. It was a unanimous decision. Even the Democrat judges thought that it was ridiculous what they were doing. So happy to have partners like Senator Devlin Robinson helping in our corner on that, because hey, without that, without us, guess what? That tolling would have went into effect, and you'd be paying that toll from now for at least 30 years, and my guess is probably beyond.
Absolutely. And I had heard, I don't know how true it is, maybe I shouldn't share the rumor, but I had heard that Senator Costa is one of the ones that had recommended that be the bridge that be tolled in Allegheny County. And I'd heard that former County Executive Rich Fitzgerald had also pushed for that, because I think originally the intent was they were looking at potentially doing the Fort Pitt Bridge. Is that what you heard as well?
That's exactly what I had heard as well. And then they'd also looked at doing further up I-79, I think, where they're doing the Neville Island Bridge, where they're doing all the work up there now too. Mm-hmm. See, this was all one big game. as far as finding, all right, we need to find traffic volume because we need the revenue for this. This wasn't about actually fixing a bridge. By the way, the bridge in South Fayette has at least 20 to 25 years of solid structural life left in it. There were only two reasons why it was picked. One, it had the traffic volume, almost 90,000 cars a day. And two, we had it in for the TIP, which is the Transportation Improvement Program, because we wanted to add another lane. That's it. The bridge is fine. Nothing wrong with it. It's perfectly safe. But there were never any consideration of alternative methods of funding this. We could have went to the feds. They passed that bipartisan infrastructure deal that we always hear about. Why couldn't we go there and say, hey, we have all this money. Oh, and guess what? The I-83 bridge, which is going to cost over $1 billion to build, by the way, was on the list to be told. Yeah, miraculously, they came up with $500 million right. from the federal government to do that. But that was never a consideration here in Allegheny County. It was garbage from the beginning. It was political football from one political politician to the next, pushing into a Republican district.
Yeah, I think it was a cynical political ploy. And, you know, not just a Republican district. I think what they were trying to do was they were trying to take and raise money in Allegheny County, but they were trying to basically tax people that weren't from here.
Right.
Because where you sit, when you go past that bridge, your next stop, you're in Washington County. So they wanted to get people headed out of Allegheny County and then coming in.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. And we had it estimated between, you know, if you worked anywhere near that corridor, it was an extra $1,000 to $3,000 a year for your family just to drive that road. Mm-hmm. I mean, 79's been around for a while, folks. I mean, you really, if you're going anywhere in this corridor here, especially, I mean, now, either way, to get to the airport, you'd be taking a toll road, well, essentially.
I mean, think about it. I mean, hey, listen, you know, what's a couple thousand dollars in tolls mean to folks today? Because, I mean, it's not like groceries are expensive or gas is costing you money.
But that's the thing with government. They always ask for more and more and more, and they never give you anything in return as far as efficiencies and value. Our good Auditor General, General Defert, they just came out with a report on PennDOT's bridges. I've been pushing for this for years and saying how much behind the curve they are. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. I've been advocating for the use of technology when we do bridge inspections. Our bridge inspections right now are done by people, which is fine, but it's subjective. And in bridge inspections, can be off by a factor of 2 points. A 4 is okay, but if it's graded a 4 subjectively, it could be a 2, and then it could be in need of huge repairs and should be closed down. Right. But using objective technology like sensor technology and cameras and all sorts of other equipment that can be used and is actually utilized by other state Department of Transportations can get you that objective measure, and then you can monitor it as well. And quite honestly, if we did that, we could really prioritize our list of bridges across the state, both on network and off network. And when I say off network, I mean local bridges, either county or municipally owned. We could go from one of the worst states in the country to one of the best states in the country right. if we just prioritize, because we have such a backlog now. But this administration and the Wolf administration, both Democrat administrations, have no interest in efficiency. They have no interest in actually tackling real problems here. And here we are. Thank God for the Auditor General doing this report.
Right. Well, and folks, I just want to say here, I mean, we were talking about the toll. There is not currently a proposal to toll that bridge or any other bridges right now in Allegheny County. But what we're just using this, I want to thank Jason for all the hard work that he put in, along with Senator Devlin Robinson, to be able to prevent that from happening. And I just wanted to explain to you folks, or to share with you, that these are the things that the Democrats are looking to doing. You may have already heard, as listeners, you saw that Pittsburgh could potentially be looking at a commuter tax because they can't adequately budget and spend the money that they take in now. So now they're potentially looking at trying to charge people who either work in downtown or in the city of Pittsburgh, or even if you work remotely from your home, work for a company that is headquartered or located in the city of Pittsburgh. And again, folks, the one thing you could be, you know, you've heard the saying, the two things certain in life are death and taxes. Okay. You know, the third is the government's always going to have their hand in your pocket there. You know, so that's, you know, and Jason, I mean, you understand, you're the one at the state level that you're fighting against this, as we just saw with the budget.
Yeah.
You know, Democrats forced you guys, in order to be able to pass a budget, to increase spending, you know, by a percentage that, I mean, I saw the Independent Fiscal Office said that next year, the the surplus could be gone.
It will be gone. I was just actually listening to our appropriations chairman, Representative Seth Grove, out of York County this morning. Current IFO projections have us basically out of money by the end of next budget, which means all that surplus that Governor Shapiro ran around talking about and how we need to use it, guess what? He built it into the budget for reoccurring revenue. It was one-time money, all right? You can't spend one-time money on reoccurring expenses. It doesn't work. Eventually, you get a structural deficit. I think the current structural deficit for next year's budget is over $3 billion, which eats up the rest of the surplus.
Well, you know, this is par for the course for Democrats. You know, folks, I mean, you say, this is why I tell people that you need to pay attention to history. Because failing to understand history means you don't learn from it. It means you're doomed to repeat it. We saw this same thing play out back under President Obama with the stimulus plan. Spent $862 billion in a stimulus, basically dispersed it to many of the different states. It was a bailout for states and for the public sector worker unions. And what happened was Governor Rendell at the time used almost $1 billion of that to fund education. And in 2010, when that money ran out, Governor Corbett was elected, but in his first budget, he actually increased the state's share of spending by almost $800 million for education. But because it was less than had been done previously, Democrats ran to the media claiming that he cut $1 billion out of education. And I think that's one of the reasons why he didn't win re-election.
And that lie still exists today. People still believe that. I hear people still saying, oh, Corbett and Republicans cut education funding by $1 billion. No, we didn't. I wasn't in office at the time, but Corbett didn't.
Exactly.
It was the stimulus money. And at the time, from what I've been talking to, because I talked to my school administrators and I talked to people around, letters went out saying this was one-time money. It went to every single school district in the state saying, hey, and I'll point out one in particular in my district. I know it's in Washington County, but Fort Cherry, I think they put a new roof on their school because they knew they got the letter saying this was one-time money. This is what we're going to use it for. And they used it for construction purposes instead of the educational, which was fine. It was applicable to the time. But then the myth and the rumor runs wild. And it's been like this, since 2010, 11?
Well, I think it might have said 2009.
I mean, it's been over.
The stimulus bill passed. It's when the money was dispersed.
Yeah.
But it was put in there in 2009, 2010. So when he came around, when Corbett was elected for and had to come up with the 2011 budget, the money was no longer there.
Yeah. it was a lie then, and it's still a lie now, and people are still talking about it. But we're running into the same thing here. The Democrats will spend every single penny that we have, all right? And then the next administration will have to worry about it. And
right.
whether Shapiro wins re-election or Republicans come in and take it over, the next administration is going to have to deal with this huge problem that we have financially. And it's the same thing that Corbett had to deal with when he took office after Rendell. It's like you said, history repeats itself, and this is exactly what's happening.
Right, and that's what I want to bring up, folks, is, despite taking and telling all these folks at the time that this money was just temporary, should be used for infrastructure, one-time investments— these folks they didn't care. They throw it in their operating budget, and then they just plead that they're broke.
Yeah,
next time budget season comes around.
Think about this. Under Rendell, they temporarily increased the personal income tax. Well, guess what? That temporary increase is still in effect, and Rendell's been out of office now for over a decade. So not only did they spend all the money that they had, they also raised more money by dipping into your pocket. Mm-hmm. And we had an opportunity to do that this year. We had an opportunity to cut taxes, because when else are you going to have, when is the best opportunity to cut taxes? When you have a surplus of funds.
Yes.
When you have money in the rainy day fund. Well, guess what? Next year, we're not going to have that. So you think we're going to be likely to cut personal income tax at that point?
Nope.
Probably not, because now we have to make up for this huge structural deficit that we have, because now we have to come up with another $3 billion that we don't have reoccurring revenue for.
Yeah. And again, this was this governor's cynical attempt to try to be able to say he did something, as he tries to maneuver and position himself for a shot on the national stage. And this is what we really want to talk about, right? We want to talk about politics. That's why we're here, man. We want to talk about the juicy stuff, okay? So, folks, Democrats, the great defenders of democracy, the ones who are going to protect you and your vote, just told 14.3 million Democrat voters that voted in the primaries for Joe Biden that, never mind, your vote doesn't count. You know, they took and forced Joe Biden out because of a disastrous debate performance, and he was falling in the polls. Polls were saying that he wasn't going to be able to win, and they said, we'll just switch our candidate out. So now they've put up Kamala Harris, you know, the vice president who's responsible just as much as Biden for every failed policy under the Biden and Harris administration, you know, and in particular, the things that she was given assigned tasks to perform, like the border czar, you know, and we spent too much time arguing with folks online or across the Democrats who claim, well, she was never the border czar, blah, blah, blah. Folks, she was assigned to be the point person on addressing immigration at the southern border. You know, yes, it was some of those countries like Guatemala and so, but it was also Mexico. It was the border. And she failed miserably, as we can attest to by the at least 10.5 million people.
Well, she is part of the
come across that border.
She is part of the Biden-Harris administration, which is responsible for the border that we have now, with how many millions of illegal immigrants running across the border every day. I mean, her name's on the administration, whether she's the president or the vice president.
Are you sure? Because it seems like the media is running cover for her, and they are actually changing history. Folks, this is positively Orwellian.
Sam, I've been around politics now for the last decade, and I have never ever seen such scripted talking points among so many groups, and then things, information just getting scrubbed. Like in the media, like I try not to do this, but CNN, MSNBC, NBC, ABC, all of them, they all say the same exact thing. How can that not be scripted? Did the talking points all go out to these reporters and these broadcasting companies all at the same time? Because they all say the same exact thing.
Well, they absolutely do. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Look at what they did the other day with Weird.
Yeah.
You know, all of a sudden, this is the new thing for them. I mean, it seemed like pundits and political commentators on every channel, you know, that were talking about Democrats or from the Democrat side, were all using the same word the same day.
See, you know. And that's the thing. So this is something I think as Republicans, we need to avoid these traps and these pitfalls, because they're trying to turn the attention on this. For this instance, it's Weird. Who cares? Let's talk about what the Biden-Harris administration has done.
Exactly.
Record-level inflations. We have a border that's completely open and out of control. We have fentanyl poisoning our population. What was it 250? Over 250,000 people died from fentanyl poisoning last year as a result of the border.
Yes.
We still have out-of-control crime. We're less safe today than we were 4 years ago. You can't tell me that these are the things that are on the top of voters' minds. Public safety, inflation, how you talked about it earlier, how are we going to pay for groceries? You know, I don't want to sit here and talk about what's weird or what they're saying about J.D. Vance, who is the vice presidential nominee for President Trump. Like, those are all distractions. And as Republicans, we need to stay away from those distractions and stay on point with our messaging. Like, what is going on today? Let's not forget about the horrible withdrawal out of Afghanistan. She was part of that, too. Harris was part of that, too. And, you know, since then, that was terrible, that withdrawal.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many things going on that have been wrong and policy-wise that we can talk about as Republicans, that the Democrats and Harris in particular have put in place that are making this country worse and making life worse for America. And, you know, they preach unity. I've never seen such divisive politics. Like, right, you know, even Obama said this, and I think it was his 2008, we're not red states, we're not blue states, we're the United States. Whatever happened to that? Because I'm not hearing that anymore.
No, that's certainly gone away. They're not talking about that. You know, we are more divided than ever, and that's very disappointing. You know, some things need to change. I can tell you.
Well, what needs to change is we need a new president.
Yes.
Harris needs to be out of there. That change needs to happen. So when we look at these things and we talk as Republicans, it's important that we stay on point, because the media is going to say they're going to get their scripted talking points and they're going to continue to go along with that. At some point, I think Vice President Harris is going to have to do an interview. I believe it's been almost 2 weeks since her inauguration as the presidential nominee, and she's yet to sit down to do an interview. As far as I'm aware, she hasn't agreed to any debates yet. Has anybody asked her a tough question? Oh, and by the way, we're hearing about all the flip-flopping of all her positions, which she does pretty consistently when she's looking to get votes. So she's just going to go wherever the wind blows her. In this case, she's going to go wherever the DNC tells her to go. And my guess is she avoids any major press moving forward. While, you know, that's not good. The American people don't really know her. And the only way to really get to know someone is to actually go do interviews and actually answer some questions and some tough questions.
And it can't happen, you know, soon enough. Okay. But we have some definite problems. Right. And I mean, it's, I want to talk about a couple of things. You were talking about the inflation that's killing folks, right? So we had inflation here and, gas prices are up 48%. You know, food prices are up over 30%. Your home energy, your electric prices, it's up at least 30%. Mortgage rates are 2.5 times what they were under President Trump. Folks, housing is unaffordable for even the middle class right now. I'm not talking about the people that are in their homes today. I'm talking about young folks, young families that are looking to purchase a home. They can't afford to do so because of the excessively high mortgage rate costs. And, you know, there are a number of things, right? So inflation has raised the cost of building a home. So building materials cost more.
Yep.
Transporting them because of the high cost of energy and gas costs more, right? Housing prices, because so many of these, under these policies, we're not building enough supply. So housing prices are going up. You have housing prices increasing. You have mortgage rates increasing. The people are getting squeezed. The American dream, and the number one toll that was used for building wealth, owning a home, you know, is no longer accessible for a large portion of the American population. And one of the things I saw, I was reading yesterday, you have 237 cities here in the United States where the median home price is $1 million. Think about that.
Wow.
$1 million. Now, that's not for, like, you go to California, yeah, that's not like great big home. That's just a median home price, $1 million, right? In Allegheny County in 2024, the median home price is $260,000 as of June of 2024. So today, with mortgage rates at 7.52% for a 30-year fixed mortgage, your monthly payment is $1,681 before taxes, okay? Under Trump, that same home, because the mortgage rate at the time, the average was 2.84%,
yep,
you know, your average price was $991. So basically, it is costing, you know, $690 more a month
for the same home. Yeah.
But think about that. I mean, so we're talking about all these things. These are the things that we need to be talking about as we move forward. You know, President Trump spoke before a group of black journalists the other day, and it was a very antagonistic crowd. And it was being asked questions and answers for a question and answer session by a woman, Rachel Scott, reporter for ABC News, who was very adversarial. And after a 35-minute delay in getting started, you know, now remember the president, he had other things to do. He had a rally that was taking place in Harrisburg, right, he was in Chicago, 35-minute delay because they can't get their technology working properly, the mics and the speakers and things like that. Doesn't even say, you know, hey, welcome, hello, but just comes right into the question by attacking him and claiming, you know, people didn't even want you to be here. You know, you said this, this, and this. What are we going to do? So his answer is flabbergasted. You know, it's caused people to, you know, their heads are blowing up all over the country. And it's like we're falling right into the trap that the Democrats are trying to set for us. You know, I think the president, former president, you know, I think that he took the bait. You know, someone asked him about that, and they asked him about Kamala Harris, and was she a DEI hire? And the president said, well, I don't know, but, you know, she's, you know, she used to emphasize her Indian heritage, and now she's turned black. And folks, you know, they went nuts. You know, my point here, and I hope the Trump campaign is listening, but and all Republicans that are listening need to focus on this. I don't care whether she's black. I don't care whether she's Indian. I don't care whether she was Asian, whatever. I don't care that at one point in her life, she emphasized her Indian heritage. I don't care that at another point in life, She may have emphasized her Jamaican or Black heritage. None of that matters. What matters is she competent and able to become the next president of the United States, and the policies and the views she has that are going to affect us? Because what I care about, and what I know our listeners care about, and what I know the voters care about, are the things that affect them. And that's inflation. That's crime. That's mortgage rates. That's healthcare costs. You know, that's the chaos around the world. If you have a relative, son or daughter, that's serving in the military, you know, these are the things that matter. And that's where we need to keep the focus. The focus needs to be on the failure of the Biden and Harris administration and their failure to be able to deliver for the American people. And we're going to talk about that right after the break. We have to take a break here, folks, to pay the bills. This is Sam DeMarco, the elephant in the room. We'll be right back. Folks, welcome back to the Elephant in the Room. We're here on WJAS 1320 AM and 99.1 FM Talk. And we've been discussing here, we have our studio guest in-house is State Representative Jason Ortiz, State Representative of the 46th Legislative District. And we were just talking in the last segment, right before we took the break, I was talking about how we needed to focus not on the shiny objects the Democrats give us, which are things like, oh, we want to talk about rice, or she's lying about whether she was a DEI hire or whatever. None of that stuff matters. We need to be talking about the things that matter to your family and to the average voter's family. And those are the things that affect you. And as I was sharing right before the break, I mean, we're talking about inflation, crime, you know, immigration, you know, high grocery and gas prices and things like that. You know, chaos around the world. If you have a child or a relative, you know, or a loved one that's in the military today, you have to be frightened.
Yeah.
You know, war in the Middle East, war in the Ukraine, China in the South Pacific. I mean,
yeah, and that's the thing. Like we have to resist the shiny object, or, you know, resist the personal attacks. I think you had a tweet the other day that I saw, and I'm like, all right, Sam's right. We got to focus on policy. None of this other stuff is going to win voters over. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But the policy does. And for Vice President Harris to get up and say that she's got, you know, she's going to get this under control. Well, why haven't you gotten under control?
Exactly.
Why did you let it get this bad in the first place? To me, all that is just another line. It's a political line. That's it. It doesn't mean anything.
Yep.
It's just it's pandering. And that's all they're doing right now. We're in this honeymoon phase for the vice president, where, again, she hasn't been asked a hard question. She hasn't had to talk about policy at all. It really, at the end of the day, the honeymoon period's going to end before Election Day. She's going to have to talk about her solutions at some point, hopefully in a debate, hopefully during an interview, hopefully during something. But the American people deserve to know what her possible solutions are. Because if they're the same as the Biden-Harris policy, guess what, folks? It's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better.
And see, and again, folks, this is the shiny object thing. They put something out there. And they'll even say something that they know is knowingly a lie, you know, just because they want you to jump on that. You know, you've seen the headlines, Republicans pounce. They want you to pounce on that. And what I'm trying to get around to folks is that, listen, being right doesn't matter, you know. And I'm trying to convey this to many of the folks on our side, who they come back and they'll share with me and they'll say, hey, well, listen, they'll provide, here's a printout of a Biden statement where he promised to hire a woman of color as the vice president candidate to sort of justify or claim that this makes and shows that she's a DEI hire. Great. Okay. But your being right is going to be small comfort if she gets elected.
Yeah. Who cares about that stuff? She's the candidate. She's the one that's going to be on the ballot now. It doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Let's move on. And that's why, you know, I agree with you. Let's talk about policy. Let's talk about all the problems that her and that administration have caused. Let's focus on them.
Right.
That's the winning message.
Exactly. And you know, Dave McCormick, candidate for U.S. Senate here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, has done his commercials. My gosh, the digital ads are phenomenal, because he's showing, for example, Bob Casey, you know, talking about how she's ready for leadership, how she's great, she's greatest things in sliced bread. And then they play a minute and a half of her saying things like she's going to ban fracking. She believes in, you know, open borders. She wants to confiscate your guns. You know, she wants to get rid of red meat. Okay. She wants to get rid of your private health insurance, all these different things. Right. So these are phenomenal. These are the things we need to be talking about, because most of the American public, they're not aware of this. And, You know, one of the things her campaign is trying to do now, and Jason, I think as of today, it's been 13 days, you know, as of Saturday here, that she has not faced or taken any questions from the press or held a press conference. But all of these issues that I'm talking about that are problematic for her, her staff has supposedly dropped to the New York Times or some other, claiming she's changed her positions on this. How convenient, folks. 90-some days out from an election, she's changed her positions. Now, she hasn't come out and told you that. No, you know, just some reporter has.
This is very similar to what President Biden did in the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. They want to portray him. They want to portray him as a moderate, and they're trying to portray her as a moderate to get those independent voters and people who may be on the fence. Guess what, folks? Joe Biden, President Biden, was not a moderate. Look at his policies. Look how he has blown out the spending. Look at the progressive nature of his policies. Please tell me what he has done. Name one thing that he's done that was moderate.
Exactly.
None. But they are trying to portray this, and this is why people should not be fooled by this. It's theatrics, and it's pandering. I mean, Vice President Harris is to the left of Bernie Sanders. She is from the most progressive state in the country, where people are fleeing en masse to get out of the state of California, okay? There's nothing moderate about this woman. Nothing.
And she's the first. She went, a group called Government Track, they took and tracked the votes of the senators that were in the Senate. And back in 2019, she was the furthest left of any senator in the Senate. She was further left than Bernie Sanders. You know, and this is a trick. Listen, Jason, we see this happen in Pennsylvania, but they do it nationally. So Bill Clinton, you know, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, they talk like a moderate on the campaign trail, but then they govern like a hardcore progressive. People think, well, oh, no way. There's constitutional checks and balances, and we'll be able to stop them. But, oh, no, they get in, and it's all about expanding big government.
Yeah.
No matter what they have to do.
I mean, look at all the executive orders he had. I think he set a record for executive orders in a day. Right at the beginning of his presidency, and that's President Biden.
Yeah, which caused the problem at the southern border. Well, a couple things. One, immediately on the first day, he took and rescinded the executive order from President Trump on the Keystone Pipeline.
Yep.
So he canceled the Keystone Pipeline. You know, right away, he caused energy prices to start to increase, and energy is a big component of what drives inflation.
Yep.
Okay? You know, and all the other things that have followed. Now, in Pennsylvania, folks, they do the same thing. They walk and talk differently. So candidate Josh Shapiro talked about the need to cut taxes, talked about the need for permitting reform, you know, talked about the need for school vouchers. And how many of these things do you think you got? You got zero, folks, zero. Bob Casey comes across, hey, nice, bland, middle-of-the-road guy. But how does he vote? 98.5% with Joe Biden and the progressives. You know, the same thing with a Chris DeLuzio. You know, and obviously, you know, Summer Lee is just a hopeless case. But these folks, they learned from Connor Lamb. When Connor Lamb was elected to Congress, you know, his commercials made him seem as if he was Republican light, and that was just how he was able to win in that district. So they position themselves as candidates as one thing, and then govern is something entirely different. You can't be fooled this year, folks. You can't be fooled. And we can talk and we can say, hey, they're Marxist, they're socialist, they're, I mean, for Kamala Harris, even communist, considering her statements about she believes in equality of outcomes.
Right.
Not opportunity, but outcomes.
And she still talks about that to this day. I mean, I thought I heard her say it last week when she was on a TV show announcing her presidency.
Which is why they don't let her go out and speak. They're trying to keep her locked in the cellar, just like replicating the Biden basement strategy from 2020. Folks, you know, I know we're talking about her, and many Republicans or conservatives, they look at her and they see a joke. I see someone that's very dangerous, and I say that because, you know, the Democrats, they knew what they were doing. They switched her out, and we don't have much time here. She's going to get a bump. Already, she has negated the advantage that President Trump had in the polls over Joe Biden. She's going to get a bump when she picks her vice presidential candidate, and she's going to get a further bump coming out of the Democratic convention. And we're going to have the last day of the Democratic convention is August 22nd, and the first day for early voting in Pennsylvania starts September 16th, you know, 3 weeks later. Yeah. Okay, folks, these are problems.
I mean, look, okay. Republicans need to show up and they need to vote. This is a completely different election now. Everything that you're looking at post-debate with Trump-Biden, it's completely changed. I mean, look at the last 3 weeks. You had an assassination attempt on the president. Joe Biden has stepped out of the race. Kamala Harris has replaced Joe Biden as the nominee. We're going to get a VP candidate. Or, well, you know, Trump named his VP. Now Harris is going to name hers. So the entire dynamic has changed. And what people need to understand is Democrats were not excited and passionate to go vote for Joe Biden.
Right.
They were probably going to stay home. And now that's not the problem now. And Republicans need to understand that that excitement to go vote now is completely different than it was 3 weeks ago.
I saw something. I believe the numbers yesterday said that under Joe Biden, Democrat enthusiasm was measured at like 37%. But under Kamala Harris, it's now at 81%. Yeah. You know, now it trails, you know, President Trump's enthusiasm rate of 86%. But still, you know, it's 40% higher than it was under Biden. And folks, Democrats have a better get out the vote infrastructure in place because of the money that they spend on it. I just don't sense from our side the concern and the enthusiasm to get out there and do what it takes to vote, as well as recruit others to vote, that I believe that we should be seeing at this point in time.
And that's where we need to raise the alarm. Like, we need to be, all the sirens and the alarms need to be blaring right now, that everyone needs to wake up and get to work. If not, you know, we're going to be in trouble. We need to make sure we're getting people registered to vote. We're making sure that we're getting people to switch their registration. And more importantly, we need to make sure people show up to vote. Whether it's voting by mail or voting in person, that's really important. You can be enthusiastic as you want for a candidate, but all that matters at the end of the day is you get more people to show up to vote. And that's where Republicans need to focus. On the messaging side, the message needs to be on how terrible of a candidate Harris is. And when people, and that's the thing, you just mentioned that, you know, she's in this honeymoon phase where she's polling better, she's really good right now, because nobody knows anything about her.
Exactly.
They're treating her like she's a generic Democrat. And folks, let me tell you, she is not a generic Democrat. She is a far left progressive from the state of California. She has far left progressive ideas. She is not a moderate. All right. And she is attached to all the failed policies of this administration. Why on earth would we give this woman 4 years as the president of this great country?
She is not competent to even be able to give a coherent sentence, full sentence, you know, off a teleprompter.
But that's why the focus, Republicans, their messaging needs to be focused on her.
Yes.
Focused on her. So people, the more they learn about her, the more they hear about her, the more that enthusiasm just drops.
But focused on her in the policies and the views.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Not the other things, okay? I'm not saying that doesn't matter. Yeah.
We're talking about that right now. We're not talking about her or anything, or like anything that has to do with personal attacks on her. We're talking about all her policy, all her votes, her record. This is what moves voters. This is what moves independents. This is what moves moderate Democrats, moderate Republicans. This is the stuff that helps. The other stuff is petty, and it's childish, and we don't need it.
Right, and I think, you know, when I was talking about this just briefly a little bit ago, but our folks, again, I think put too much emphasis on we want to be right. They said something, they lied. I'm going to prove that they're wrong or that I'm right. But the problem is, we already know that they lied. We already know that they're wrong, okay? To her base, it's not going to matter, right? What we're trying to do is we're trying to get the votes, because in our base is already with us. What we're doing is we're competing for the folks who are undecided yet. Mm-hmm. We're competing for the independents, the folks who haven't yet made up their mind who they're going to vote for. And those folks, you know, they want to hear about policy. They want to hear about the things that are going to make a difference in their lives or their families' lives. That's what they care about. And that's why we need to be talking about these things. You know, the crime, the fentanyl, the border. I mean, again, all of the kitchen table issues. Education. How about... And we just saw the other day here in the Olympics, you had an Italian woman, 25-year-old, who withdrew. She forfeited a fight. She was fighting a man, a biological male, you know, from Libya. And 46 seconds into the fight, she just said, I'm done. She said she'd never been hit, you know, so hard in her life. Why are we allowing men to compete in women's sports, you know, and particularly combat sports? This is insane, but this is who the left is. And today, on Thursday, you know, Biden and Harris's Title IX changes went into effect. you know, basically saying, encouraging this.
Yeah, and guess what? Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, and our attorney general didn't do a thing about it. They're just letting it go in. They didn't file any challenges, any lawsuits. Meanwhile, there are states all over the country that have not only filed that have been successful, but unless somebody files from the state of Pennsylvania, it still goes into effect today.
And that's a great point. And that's also going to be a problem, I believe, for Josh Shapiro as he looks for his opportunity here on the national stage, because rumors abound that Kamala Harris is going to select him to be her vice presidential candidate. And I think, you know, on the one hand, do I think he can help her in Pennsylvania? Absolutely, because he has high approval ratings. But that's because he's never been challenged. And a lot of people don't know about a lot of the issues that are out there.
And he gets very defensive when he's challenged, too. I've seen him during appropriations hearings when he was the attorney general. You know, Senator Kristen Phillips Hill went after him, and he just he took personal swipes at her. And I'm guessing if someone or a reporter asks him a tough question about that, he's going to react similarly. Again, he hasn't been pushed. And dealing with the national media, he may not be. They may be gloves off and do whatever. But, I mean, to your point, yeah, I mean, he would be a good pick for her, because I think in their mind, in the Democrats' mind, is he would hand deliver the state of Pennsylvania. And, folks, we can't allow that to happen.
No.
Even if he is named the VP nominee, we cannot allow that to happen.
My opinion is that whoever wins the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is going to win the presidency, okay? So it absolutely needs to be won for Donald Trump if we have any hope of turning this country around. And that's how important this is, which is why I can't encourage our listeners enough. Look, if you care about the country, do something about it. Get involved. Sign up at our website at allegheny.gop. Submit your name and information if you'd like to volunteer. There's a link to donate to help us buy signs, to do things to, you know, to help get the vote out. Any help you can give is greatly appreciated, but you got to get involved. Trump has a Trump Force 47 where you can be a precinct captain or a Trump Force captain, where you can help get your neighbors, your relatives, just the folks on your street who are identified as Trump voters, to make sure that they either vote early, apply for a mail-in or absentee ballot, or make plans to go to the polls on Election Day. But folks, you know, we're making tremendous strides in registration. As of this past Monday, Jason, the Democrat registration advantage in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is now under 360,000. And I mean, when Trump won in 2016, Democrats had a million voter registration advantage. So we have made tremendous progress, but that only matters if we go and vote. We have to show up at the polls and vote.
Show up, do your mail-in ballot. You never know what could happen between now and Election Day. Make a plan. Get your neighbors to make a plan. Because I'm telling you, everybody out there listening, Allegheny County is ground zero. As Allegheny County goes, so does the rest of the state. And if Republicans can show up and independents can show up and vote Republican this time around, we got a good shot at winning the state. I mean, I look when Corbett won. I know he didn't win Allegheny County, but he might as well have won Allegheny County because he performed so well here. Did he win?
He did. He actually won Allegheny County, yes. I mean, it was a narrow victory.
But still.
Over Dan Honorato, the county executive at the time. But yes, but he did win.
He won. So it can be done. It can be done here in Allegheny County. We just need to work hard. Can't take anything for granted. This is a brand new race. We've all got to work even harder than we were working a month ago.
Right. So, you know, folks, we were just talking here about some of the things that, you know, Governor Shapiro is going to face if he goes on the national stage. But a couple of them are, one, back in 2023, he had his top aide, Mike Verb, former state senator, was
state
accused.
Rep.
Former state rep, was accused of sexual harassment by a young woman in March. She felt that they failed to adequately respond and protect her. She had to quit her job because the harassment was so bad. Now, this took place in March. Everybody in the Capitol knew about it, but Governor Shapiro did nothing about it. You know, Verb stayed on until September. And then when he finally resigned, you know, Shapiro puts out a press release thanking him for his contributions. What Shapiro's administration did is they had this woman sign a non-disclosure agreement, paying her $295,000 of taxpayer money. And my understanding is he also made his aide, Verb, sign this non-disclosure agreement as well. And Governor Shapiro has not released either of them from that non-disclosure agreement so that they could be questioned or be asked about that. And my understanding from the scuttlebutt around the Capitol is that there are more women that were harassed that are just hesitant to come forward because they've seen how this poor woman was treated.
Well, that's the transparency you can expect from this administration. And he should release her from her NDA and let her talk. Because if he's going to be the vice president nominee, this all needs to get out. It all needs to be vetted. Everything needs to be public about what he knew and when he knew. And during that whole process, he also threw a whole bunch of slight at Republican Senator Kim Ward, who's the president pro temp of the Senate, the first female to hold that position. And he basically insulted her many times over this case.
Yeah. And then you have, well, he obviously has a problem with strong women, you know, whether you talk about Senate pro temp Kim Ward, where when governor was questioned about something, he just responded, well, consider the source. You talked about the appropriations hearing with Senator Kristen Phillips Hill. I was asking him a question. He told her he didn't like her tone.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, this guy, he really has something. Now, that was one of the issues. Another issue is going to be his defense of Title IX and transgenders being allowed to compete in sports here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Another one is going to be the Pennsylvania Supreme Court just announced that they will hear arguments from the family of Ellen Greenberg. Ellen was a Philadelphia teacher who died in 2011 in a case her family argues was not suicide as it was officially ruled and Shapiro basically approved here. Now, she was a beloved teacher at one Juniata Park Academy, was found dead in her apartment in 2011 with more than 20 stab wounds. She was just 27 years old. And they're trying to claim that it was suicide. But like the medical examiner ruled that she had been stabbed twice after she was dead. Okay. But Shapiro is accused of covering that up. So he's going to have to deal with that. You know, so there's a whole bunch of things, not to mention that, you know, he's always fond of saying that he's the only, he said, I don't know why he says this because it's not true. I'm the only governor with a divided legislature. Okay. Well, what he should be saying is, he's the least accomplished governor with a divided legislature because he's only signed like 111 bills.
What sounds like an excuse to me. I mean, look, I'm in the legislature. I'm in the minority in the House of Representatives. There's plenty of opportunity to do bipartisan things to get done. He just doesn't insert himself into these things. We had this happen last year with the last budget. Mm-hmm. He let the House and the Senate basically go to war with each other instead of trying to play mediator. And he just let it play out. He let the House Democrats roll him into getting what they wanted. That's why you didn't get school vouchers. And then during another instance, which I was had a front row ticket to, was with the Basic Education Funding Commission. You know, again, he stepped in at the very, very end after things were about to blow up, trying to get an agreement on what this new formula and recommendations on money. I mean, he basically just sits there and whatever is handed to him is what he takes. You know, someone who wants to be a real leader should step up and say, this is what I'm looking for. Or when you have a divided legislature like this, broker a deal, be a negotiator, be the arbitrator, be something. Don't be the backbencher who sits there looking to put out a press release. Because honestly, that's what he's been doing for the last 2 years.
Yeah. And I mean, he is a master of self-promotion. But I think, I mean, I saw somebody though, he's going to, not only is he going to have to deal with the national media, he's also going to have to deal with the meme makers, you know, those folks. I saw one out there. Someone took the character Lord Farquaad from Shrek and superimposed Shapiro's face on that. You know, I wonder, I mean, he has thin skin. So it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to those sorts of things as we move forward.
I know it's always interesting to talk about VP candidates, but I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, a VP has, they're part of the administration. They're not out front and center. And look, even J.D. Vance, you know, he's probably one of the more intelligent vice presidents that we had. I mean, with his educational background. But you look at what's going on, particularly in this last administration between Biden and Harris. I mean, look at Joe Biden's debate performance. I mean, you can't tell me that she wasn't involved in some of the decisions being made in the administration.
Listen, that is a great point. I didn't bring that up. The fact that, you know, folks understanding and finally the press doing their job for 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was
2 weeks. And uncovering
the
fact that for 3 years, they've been hiding his, you know, his cognitive decline. She was instrumental in front and center in doing so because she's the one that was telling us how fit he was and how on the ball and engaged. And
so was there honesty in that? Because none. She saw him. She talked to him. I mean, They're together. But she didn't say a word about it. And it's just like the media. Up until the debate, he was great. Joe Biden was wonderful. And then like right after the debate, he's terrible. He needs to go. And then when he steps down, oh, he's great again. So is it just he does what you want him to do, or you get what you want so you feel good and we're going to make this guy a heroic figure when in reality he's not? Like, I've never, like, in this, again, we talked about this earlier, in the span of 3 weeks, the media went from hating Joe Biden, to loving Joe Biden. I mean, nothing materialistically changed. I mean, he did, yes, he took himself off, but really, was he going, like,
I mean, don't believe he took himself, he was forced out. You know, rumors are, and you saw news reports claiming Barack Obama called him after breakfast that Sunday morning. Because Joe had his campaign manager out on the Sunday morning show saying that he's in it to win it, he's not going anywhere. And by that afternoon, you know, he had dropped out. But rumor has it that Barack Obama threatened him and said they have Kamala Harris on board, and they were going to take and invoke the 25th Amendment to toss him out.
And look, if that happened, I mean, look, it doesn't change the situation before the debate where Vice President Harris knew what was going on and said nothing. Again, I think it speaks to the level that everyone should know is that it was dishonest, and had she seen that stuff, she should have said something for the better of the country.
Exactly.
Everyone's saying that Joe Biden stepped down to better our country. Why didn't Kamala Harris stand up for the better of our country and say that this guy should not be in charge?
Absolutely. Well, listen, Jason, I can't thank you enough for being here today, joining us on the show. And as always, when we get started talking, man, time seems to fly.
It does.
Folks, that's it for us here on The Elephant in the Room. I will be back next week, same place, same time, same station. Talk to you then. Have a great weekend.